in the past as a podcast, betterlawns.com. Good morning. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author, and I love helping people with their gardening questions, with their gardens, designs, and how to do something in their garden. I will tell you, if I don't hear a response back from my questions, if you email me, when I respond back, check your spam if you don't hear, because a lot of my stuff goes to spam because I have a little icons on it. And so if you do not hear back from me and you sent me a garden question, check your spam because I may have responded and you just didn't get it in your, your normal box.
Yes.
And so, Lizzie, how are you?
I am doing great. I'm excited for the dirty word of the day.
And the dirty word of the day is efflorescence. Efflorescence, that's E-F-F-L-O-R-E-C-E-N-C-E, efflorescence. Do you have a clay pot or a ceramic pot that has a white substance caked on the outside of the pot? Efflorescence comes from the French term flowering out, and refers to the way the coating flowers out onto a surface. Efflorescence is a white chalky deposit that's found on brick, clay, masonry, concrete, and plastered surfaces. If you've ever seen a brick wall that has white, kind of looks like white paint splattered on it, it could be those chalky deposits. It's formed when natural salts and minerals in these materials dissolve in water, and they travel to the surface, evaporate, and the mineral deposits are left as white, chalky stains. Typically, this is just a part of aesthetics, and it is not damaging, as in a structural issue. But is the efflorescence harmful to your plants? No, rarely in small amounts is it harmful. However, very high levels of salts can potentially affect soil structure and may be detrimental to your container plants. This can be more of an issue in coastal gardens that have sea spray and salt water in the air and ground than in the interior of Florida. Large amounts of salt could burn your plants or dehydrate them very quickly. So if you think you have salt damage on your plants, you could see white stain residue on the leaves and stems. Salt damage could reduce or stunt growth, could cause disfigurement in stems and foliage. It could create your plants a witch's broom, which is tufting of new growth. And you could have reduced leaves, flowers, and fruit. So how do you remove the efflorescence from your pots? Well, you take your pot and put it into a bigger pot or bucket, and you soak your pot with 1 cup of white vinegar to 3 to 4 cups of water for 20 to 30 minutes. Check the pots after 20 minutes to see if the mineral deposits have dissolved. If they haven't, soak it again for another additional 30 minutes. Repeat checking and soaking till all the deposits are gone. And if you have any stubborn ones, you can use a wire brush, but be mindful of the porcelain, painted, or plastic pots when you're using a wire brush. Allow the pot to dry, and then you want to clean your pots from the salt mineral deposits on an annual basis. So the dirty word of the day is efflorescence. And I think that's appropriate right now for the beach.
I think that is a very good idea.
You know, and I will tell you, though, I'm kind of torn because I love seeing vintage pots with the milky, chalky deposits on them, and it creates that kind of coating on the outside. They look so cool, and they look antique. So I'm kind of torn between it, but it's because I don't have to deal with salt water and sea air. So on the coast, it's a little bit more of a problem. But I have to tell you, I love vintage pots. And if I have algae on them, you know, I see articles on how to clean the algae off your pots. And I'm going, why leave the algae alone? It looks gorgeous. And so I'm a little torn with the dirty word of the day. But you can catch all of them on our betterlawns.com website. And you can also catch what to do in the month of June for your website on betterlawns.com. Catch our newsletter too as well. It's free, and you will not get any spam at all. And you can catch my landscaping malpractice, how to know when to fire your landscaper, and then also my plant of the month and my design tips. So you can catch that all. If you're interested in going with me around the world with gardens, you can check out artandbloomgardentours.com, artandbloomgardentours.com. And we're leaving in a few weeks to go to Ireland. I'm looking forward to it. Tony and I are so excited to be going. My daughter's going, and we have a wonderful, wonderful group going. And I just love to go and geek out with everybody else on the beauty of these gardens. We're calling it 50 Shades of Green. If you'd like to go with us to other tours, you can check out artandbloomgardentours.com. We'll be right back. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Jim Davis is the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Science County Extension Director in Sumter County. Over the last 18 years, Jim's effort as an extension agent has made significant impact to Florida in the fields of horticultural, natural resources, and urban pest management. The University of Florida programs that Jim has worked with include the Florida Yards and Neighborhoods, which we started to get way, way, way back long ago, 20 years ago, and residential horticulture and working with master gardeners. And he's also been the county extension director for Hernando County. Jim is a native Floridian and an award-winning wildlife photographer. So let me suggest, if you love Florida wildlife and photography, follow Jim Davis on his Facebook page. Good morning, Jim. That's an awful lot you've accomplished in the last 18 years. How are you?
I'm doing well, Teresa. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. We started back when it was known as Florida Yards and Neighborhoods, right? It's called
back in
Florida.
The day, that's right.
It's called Florida Friendly Landscaping now. And so, Jim, Florida is the strawberry capital of the world. It's the caladium capital of the world. And tropical plants and foliage capital of the world, do they grow all these millions of plants from seed?
Well, you know, seed is just one of the means on how to produce new plants. But plant propagation, vegetative propagation, is are other ways to produce more plants. And, you know, propagation is simply the process of creating a new plant from an existing one. And I would almost bet that most of the people listening have probably done some propagation in their landscape.
I think you're right. I think everybody wants to try and keep something alive, or, you know, get a clipping and try and growing it. And so besides mm-hmm. seeds, what propagation methods are you talking about?
Well, you know, there's other ways, you know, so other ways. So you can have spores, think of ferns, you have rhizomes, think of iris, bulbs, you know, amaryllis is very popular, tubers, caladiums, or potatoes. So those are some of the ways that plants replicate themselves.
Okay, and then so how do growers do it?
So if you want to produce a lot of plants, there's especially those that are genetically identical, you have several ways. So you have plant division, you have air layering, and my personal favorite, Teresa, are cuttings. And I used to do plant propagation as a hobby a long time ago. And cuttings were a simple way to produce a ton of plants.
That's my favorite way too. So let's explain all of these. And so, plant division, what does that mean?
So plant division is probably one of the most common propagation methods done by homeowners. So plant division is a method of propagation where basically a parent plant is split into multiple smaller sections. So it's usually used for perennials. So think of it this way. It involves physically separating the clump of plant, if you will, to create new independent plants. It's also a really effective way to manage these overcrowded plants or to rejuvenate older plants.
I can tell some of my clients, I'll tell them, you should start your own nursery. You have so many plants here. And they don't understand why these plants keep growing and growing and growing. And so is there a special time of the year to do that? Or I'm thinking about the stress we have right now with the drought and the heat and no rain. So is there a special time to divide plants?
Well, you know, I like to do it probably in early spring. I don't really want to do it in the summer months because it gets too hot. It's just too rough for the plants.
Right, stressful.
So you can start, and it depends on species as well. For plants such as liriope, I mean, you can start that in the fall when it's cool and start dividing them up early spring. But my favorite time to start propagating would definitely be around, you know, February, March-ish, way before the heat comes.
Okay. And so does that apply to air layering? What is air layering?
So air layering, so this is a technique used to grow new plants from existing ones by encouraging roots to form on a branch but still attached to the parent plant. So what you do is you take like a ring of bark, by removing a ring of bark on a healthy branch, you can apply rooting hormone, and then wrapping the area with moist sphagnum moss, for example.
Okay.
And you want to cover it with some plastic. And so you let it sit, and it's, you know, taking everything from the mother plant. It doesn't hurt the mother plant at all. And so in time, you're going to have roots develop in this plastic. And what you do is you just cut the branch. So the branch is cut from the parent plant, and then you will pot the new plant. So... and it's usually made on stems from previous season's growth.
Okay.
But the best results are from the shoots with several leaves on the stem that are actively growing. And so this is a great way to propagate, you know, plants such as, you know, one of my favorite to start practicing air layering is ficus. If you want to start air layering, these are the easiest plants to start with, are some ficus.
Okay, so how does air layering differ by differ than cutting a plant's branches?
Well, if you're doing like tip cuttings and stuff like that, you're actually removing the plant itself. So air layering, you're just removing that that piece of bark, and it's taking everything from the mother plant. And so, it's very time consuming, if you will, to do air layering in the process. And you'll probably get roots coming on probably about a month or so. I like to do it. You can do it on fruit trees. You can do it on hibiscus, viburnum. And what I've seen in the past is what people have done and people that I know is that you have these shrubs, and what they'll do is they'll come through and they'll, on the lower branches, they'll start air layering. And they'll just leave it alone. And then about several months later, when they, quote-unquote, have to trim the plants, then they trim the air layering pieces and then put those in the pots. And once you get used to it, it's all about practice.
Right.
So once you get used to it, you can be very efficient. And what's nice about that is you put this into a pot. You put it in like a, you know, 6-inch pot or whatever, and then that plant will root out, and you have a pretty mature specimen as opposed to, you know, like a tip cutting, which will take some time.
Right. And so which one is the most successful for you?
Okay. So if for plant propagation,
cuttings.
I like cuttings.
Yeah, so, I do too. So
this is my favorite. And so this is what I used to do. So first of all, I always like to start with the easy plants to practice. And one of the easiest plants to choose is coleus. And I'm a coleus nut. I love coleus. And what you do is you cut a 4-inch section from a healthy turgid. So turgid means it's not wilting in water, right?
Okay.
So you don't want a wilt plant.
Right.
So you want to cut below the node. And if for those that don't know what the node is, it's simply the area of the stem where the leaves begin to grow. And you cut, you won't want to cut flat. You want to cut at an angle, kind of like a 45-degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
You want to remove probably the some of the leaves from the lower third of the cutting.
Right.
And then you want to dip it in some rooting hormone. So the powders are some of my favorites in the past, but one of the many mistakes people do is they open the container, they put the cutting in the container. No. You pour the rooting hormone, maybe into a cup or, you know, a plate or whatever, and put your cutting on that. Don't put your cutting in the container because that could contaminate it. Tap it off to get the excess rooting hormone on. Make sure that you have your trays available with your potting media. I like to choose a very light potting media with a lot of perlite. I like starting trays myself because when you're starting new cuttings, they're very, very small, and you can fill it up immensely. But one of the key things also that a tip from one of my professors told me is that prior to sticking that cutting in, take a pencil, put a hole in the media in your trays, and then put your cutting in it, and then put the soil around the plant. Because if you put your cutting and you jam the cutting into the soil, you may lose some of that rooting hormone.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and also another tip that most people don't know, Teresa, is that with plants that have a little bit larger leaves on them, you want to reduce water loss on the plant. Because, you know, the water loss is through the leaves, the transpiration. So what you want to do is you want to take some scissors, sharp scissors, and cut the larger leaves in half. Huh. And that'll help reduce that. Yes, that'll help reduce that water loss. So that's something that I always did with coleus. But you can move on. And one of my other favorite plants to take tip cuttings was American Beautyberry.
Which is
very, very successful on American Beautyberry cuttings. It roots incredibly easy. And I like to take the stems, think of it this way. If you can bend the stem and it doesn't break, don't use that cutting. If it snaps like a pea, you want to use that piece. Okay. So, but you can do cuttings, you can do hibiscus, you can move on to certain plants such as holly if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But the sweet potato vine, the coleus, the beautyberry, those are going to root a lot faster for you.
Wow, that's great information. And so, what about putting plastic over the trays? Do you do that? Do we need to do that with the humidity here in Florida?
Well, I mean, you can. I just be careful about getting it too hot in there. With you can put plastic. You certainly can do that. You can get fancy. You can get a misting bed, misting bench if you want. And so that's something that I had. And it's a simple bench, and you get a timer. My timer basically applied water. Mine was every minute, but you can have timers every 10 seconds, preferably. So that way you're not losing that water. That's why you put that plastic over the plant,
right?
Too.
Right.
You know, so you're not giving that water loss.
And then always shaded. You don't put them out in the full sun.
Always shaded. Yes. Yes. And that holds true for whenever those plants root. Then you have to move them out of that little area with the plastic or the misting bench or whatever, and then putting into a holding area. You can put them up there. Make sure it has a shade cloth so the sun's not beating down on them. And once they root, you can transplant them into a half-inch pot. And Teresa, I had so many plants, I was giving them away.
Wonderful.
So
I will give you more information on the Facebook page. Thank you, Jim, so much for coming on. I always love talking with you. You have so much great information. Check out Jim Davis's photography on Facebook. It's wonderful. Have a great day. We're going to be right back with more of your gardening questions. Now's the time to give us a call. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. This is the time to get your phone calls in. 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text 23680, like Brad. And Brad has a great question. So, Brad, when I was talking about the bahia grass, I think I morning fogged Apalachicola bahia grass instead of Argentina. It is Argentina bahia grass that doesn't get as many Y seeds. So the Pensacola is the bahia grass that, when, you know, you can mow it, and then 3 days later, it's got all the Y seeds coming back up again, and it looks like you need to mow it again. So I prefer the Argentina. It doesn't get as many of those Y seeds. So they both are good. Pensacola is definitely cheaper, and so it is, you know, kind of the preferred choice, or the one that most people use. But the Argentina has less Y seeds. So if you want to incorporate the Argentina seeds into your existing bahia grass, then that would work as well, too. Great question. Thank you. Again, my morning fog with
I'm me like, too.
You know, when you see High Springs and you're thinking about it and you're talking, you know, it's kind of it happens. Let's go to Scott in Palm Bay. Good morning, Scott. How can I help you?
Good morning. Good morning. I have two quick pest questions
okay.
for you. I have, I call them cannas, but down here they pronounce them a little different.
Cannas?
Cannas, yeah. That's
okay.
I've heard them called down. I have that leaf roller.
Okay.
Every year I get it, and this year I swore I was going to jump on it early. Well, I seen one in the garden yesterday, and I squished them.
Okay, good.
And I've been spraying, I believe it is, I have in my garage, seven, the white liquid.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't seem to deter them. They would eat the leaves away, and by the, you know, by late July, there'd be hardly any leaves. The flowers, of course, would look nice, but there'd be no leaves. So the whole plant kind of looks raunchy.
Okay. All right. So you can use spinosad. Or you can use Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, okay? And those will also kill leaf-chewing critters. So I would just say the seven, you might just have to do a reapplication of it, okay? And so follow the labels. So I don't know why it didn't work. It should work. Seven is really an excellent product. So, but I would just keep an eye on it. Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew.
Okay, thank you. I also have... Agastacia.
Yeah,
plants.
I love them. Mm-hmm.
The girl called them hummingbird mint.
Yes.
And I've had two of them, an orange one and a yellow one. The yellow one took off. They've been in the ground 2 months. The yellow one looks beautiful, but the orange one was struggling, and I went out this morning, and boy, it looked terrible. It was all dehydrated and just ready to almost. And I looked at it closer, got down my hands and knees, and I seen a little white bug or two on it. And when I went to squish them, they kind of scooted a little bit. I thought, well, this isn't the mealybugs. I wasn't sure what it was. I didn't know if I could also spray seven on them.
I would, but I wouldn't do it in the heat of the day. So I would do it in the early morning or at dusk. Yeah, you can go ahead and you can spray that too as well. But be very light. You know, you don't have to, I don't want you to overuse the chemical with this heat and drought going on.
Okay, it didn't appear that it was a white fly, but what other bug could it be that was a white colored and would move when I went down to get it?
Yeah, it could just be just a very early stage, you know, of a white fly or grub, you know. So I don't know what it is without a picture looking at it, but it just may be just a very early stage of an insect. And so it's the one that does the damage though, so you want to get it.
Yes. Thank you, Miss. I appreciate your information.
You're welcome, Scott. Thank you for listening and calling in. I appreciate you calling in from Palm Bay. Super duper.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's go to Eileen in Polk City. Good morning, Eileen. How are you?
On the mend.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. So
yes,
happy to hear that.
I cracked rib.
Oh, no.
My walker didn't want to go the way I wanted it to go.
You know, I think about that the older I get, you know, just every little move, you just, you know, just one fall. And so you just want to be careful. We want
oh,
you to
yeah,
be careful. No more drinking and walking around your garden,
even if it's water.
No, I'm not allowed. I'm still on house arrest.
I know he's taking good care of you.
He is, but I'm still on house arrest.
How can we
I
help
can't
you this morning?
Wait to get out in the yard.
Well, I know you're going to be calling and asking us what to do with all the things that you have to do in your garden. So
that's right.
I'm looking forward to that. All right.
I have a question about neem oil.
Okay.
Can I use that on the grasshoppers?
You can. It's not going to work. But you can. It's not going to work on them, no. Neem oil does not work on... You're talking about these big lubbers.
Yes.
Oh, no. Just scissors is the only thing that can work on them. Scissors and trowels and shovels and bricks. Once they get big.
Can't even put seven dust on them.
No. Oh, when they're little, when they're black and they're just newly hatched and they have the stripes on them, the orange and the yellow stripes on them, yes, you can use seven and, you know, insecticidal sprays on them and pesticides on them. And yes, when they're small, once they get to the colorful rainbow stage and they're yellow and they're 3 to 5 inches long, the only two things that'll kill them are bricks.
Or my hand.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh, that's kind of gross. Lizzie and I made an ugly face there.
No, I'll use gloves.
Or you can drive over them in the road, and so you get extra points if you do that.
No, I'm not allowed to drive.
Oh, that's right. You're not allowed to drive. Okay, well, that's just for everybody else. Everybody else. There you go. Free Eileen.
No going out in the yard. I'm on house arrest.
There you go. Well, rest up, Eileen. I hope you feel better. Go send your husband out to get those lubber grasshoppers.
No, he's not feeling well either. He's got an infection in his arm.
So. Oh, poor thing. All right. Well, we're glad you could listen to Better Lawns and Gardens. Take care, hon.
And so, you too.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. So, let's see. Got a great text message, but it's not perfect. It's not perfect, but I'm going to answer it when we come back. Okay, perfect text message is your name and location. That will help me out. But we're going to be back with more Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. You still have time to get your gardening question answered. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. You can also sign up for our free monthly newsletter, and you can go to betterlawns.com and get that, and also to my website, she-consulting.com, and you'll start getting them. The June issue went out this morning. Let's go to, and I am quoting, Cheapskate Michael from Melbourne. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning, ma'am. I didn't think she'd say it. That's wonderful. I have two questions real quickly. A couple of weeks ago, you had a guest on from one of your nurseries that was talking about reusing soil. And I've got a large tomato plant that died because I hadn't listened to Better Homes and Gardens. And I planted it when it was too late in the season. But anyway, so two questions real quick. How do I recycle that soil without going and, buying another $10 or $12 bag of potting soil? Okay. And then the second question is tomato. How do I save the seeds for next year's planting?
Oh, cool. All right. So the soil question is, so is it in a pot or a container that you have?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, it's a 10-gallon.
Okay, super. So how low is it in the pot? Do you have to add some more soil into it, or are you just going to use it to fill other pots?
Well, the way I listen to the program, I guess I should have more tomatoes and just do them earlier, so I'll probably add some more soil.
Yeah. Okay, so if it's lower, because plants eat soil, so the soil naturally decomposes and gets lower and lower and lower in the pot. So each year, instead of throwing that away, though, you want to add to it. You can just refresh it by just adding some more soil, new fresh soil, and put it in there and just mix it up.
That's a cheaper way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that way you don't have to buy as much. All right.
Thank you.
And then how do you save
tomato seeds?
Yes. And how do you save your tomato seeds? So you get a tomato, and you can just use a tomato that you're going to eat and scrape out that kind of jelly where the seeds are, and then place that on a towel, okay, and just kind of let it sit for a couple of days. And then you just kind of take a sieve and you strain it. So you want to get that jelly off of it. Okay, oh, and then strain it in a sieve and wash that jelly off. And then you just dry the seeds.
And then they'll stay till next year. And I
yeah,
guess, man,
you can put
it.
You can put them in an envelope, but just a regular white envelope or a green envelope. The color doesn't matter. But just put them in an envelope and keep them in a dry area.
Those two great tips, and I do appreciate it. Once again, hope you all have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mike. Call anytime. Let's go to Carol in Merritt Island. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Teresa. Thank you for taking my call. As I said to your call screener, we have a very large mango tree, old. It's at least 30 years old.
Wow.
I would say it's probably a good 40 feet tall and huge around.
Okay.
There are Kent mangoes. And for the
Those are supposed to be
time,
really good. I've never tasted one, but they're supposed to be really good.
Oh, they're marvelous. They're marvelous. But for the first time, sadly, they are getting black spots on them. So I brought one in, and I did some research on my computer, and it seems like it has anthracnose something. It's a little bit longer name.
Right.
And according to treatment for that, it requires some sort of a copper fungicide.
Right.
But this tree is so large, Teresa, I don't know if that's possible.
Yes.
Could it be that the tree has outlived itself? Or are there arborists around that would be willing to take on a tree that's this big?
No, there are plenty of arborists. You can look up a certified arborist by going to the International Society of Arborists and selecting one in your area. But also, too, I want to figure out why you're getting a fungus on your fruit.
I know.
When we're not getting rain. Okay, so that's the big thing for me. When do you water your lawn?
Well, we have an irrigation system,
right.
So it's usually twice a week.
Right, yeah. But when? What time of the day?
Oh, it's either early morning or in the evening after the sun is starting to go down.
Okay, that's your problem. Okay, so you do not want you do not want your plants to be wet longer than 5 hours. After 5 hours, then the plant can develop a fungus, okay? That humidity, the disease issue, the plant that's susceptible to the disease. We have a perfect trifecta here in Florida for disease issues. And so what I want you to do is just do it in the early morning hours. Don't do it after 4, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night. Okay, now
so the only in the morning. But am I correct in this anthracnose? It's black spots when you cut into it.
Yeah.
What it has.
Yes, it is what it is. And and so, but I want you to stop watering at night. Now, with Florida and with rain, we could get rain at night and we still have the issue. So if you're getting an issue, then you need to spray it with a copper fungicide. And then you can also put a fungicide preventative on it. Okay, so that the copper fungicide will do that as well, but you can also do a systemic as well, too. So, but I think if you cut out the... So, when you say you water in the morning and water at night, do you water twice a day?
No. I'm just saying it depends. If they forgot to do it in the morning, we'll do it at night. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So stop,
no, we're not doing that.
Okay, so stop doing it at night. And how long are you watering for?
I think it goes about 45 minutes.
Okay, that's fine. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
But just do
but
it like
it. This tree is huge, Teresa.
Huge. I'm so beautiful. Well, I'm so glad. I don't think it's declining at all. So just to change your irrigation habits to stop putting water down at night.
Try and get it treated.
Okay, and then use a copper fungicide, and it will get rid of future events. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
Thank you so much. Great question.
Thank you so much for your advice. I appreciate it. I love your show.
Thank you so much, Carol. I appreciate it. And so the cherry tomatoes. So this is a great text message. You know, how do you get your cherry tomatoes, which have grown quite tall, can I pinch them back, she asks, to make them bushier, and by how much? And she says she enjoys our show every Saturday morning. Thank you so much. Well, you want to pinch your cherry tomatoes back. You can take the suckers, the side suckers off. Okay, you can take those off, and, you know, you don't want to take it off from the top. The side suckers go up to where it's flowering or where the cherry tomatoes are producing, and you want to make your stems and branches so that they're like Y-shaped, okay? So you have two what we call leaders. And from there, that'll make a healthier stem, and it will bush out even more. And so you can prune the lower leaves off. You can pinch those off, too, as well, and direct all of the growth into the stem, you know. And so that's really easy way to prune back cherry tomatoes. You don't necessarily want to cut off the top. You don't want to cut off the top of the vine.
Yes, and to go back to Cheapskate Michael's question, I have been wondering about with like my tomatoes just, you know, not producing like I feel that they should. And yeah, I was talking to my husband Shrek about adding another tier, I guess you would call it another level of boards,
right,
to add more soil and make it even deeper, because right now it's only like Is that almost what, 2 feet deep?
Yeah. I would make it deeper.
Yeah,
that's a little small. Not that there's not enough room there for it. I mean, that's okay.
But still,
but you can get more roots to go down deeper. Now, what is at the bottom of your raised bed?
I have that black.
Okay, the black plastic.
Yeah. Black silk.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, the silk fencing stuff. That's fine. So go ahead and add another layer because it can't go down much further.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yes, and I've been experimenting. Like on these tomatoes, I go through and I don't let anything grow like
laterally.
Well, nothing at the bottom.
Right.
Like I'm constantly like even if it's like about 6 inches high, I'm clipping everything except for the top two branches.
Okay.
And then whenever the next one, I've got really tall tomatoes from this, like a
plant. I'm so proud of you. I am so proud of you.
It's almost like I want a show for gardening or something.
That's wonderful. Well, we're going to get some rain this week. Everybody keep your fingers crossed. I really do appreciate it. What's some more items that you can do this month in your garden? You want to, if you're getting a new lawn, especially if it is zoysia grass or Bermuda grass, you want to water your new lawns every day for the first week. And with this heat, you might water them 2 to 3 times a day, just intermittent, you know, every 4 to 5 hours, just water them unless you get some rainfall. Then the second week, you water it every other day, okay? And this is for all turfs. You want to push those roots down deeper. You do not want the roots to stay close to the surface. The third week, you're watering every 3 days. And by the end of the month, lawns are established. If you mow it 3 times, it is established, and that turf only needs 1 to 1.5 inches of water a week, no matter what kind of turf it is. So if we're getting rainfall and you get 2, 3, 4, 5 inches of rain, no need to have your irrigation system on. Check for you want to check for chinch bugs and sod webworms right now. Thank you to our guest, Dana Venrick, Quality Green Specialist Nursery. Go out and see him for his foliar feeding products. And thank you to Jim Davis, County Extension Director for Sumter County, on his propagation skills. Appreciated. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and Lizzie is the most wonderful producer in the world.
Thank you.
And we will be back next week from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios and Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Also go to Better Lawns .com to get all the podcasts from the past and from this show that you're now listening to. Go to Teresa's Facebook page, betterlawns.com, because she has a really cool thing about moss that she just discovered, and the University of Florida is checking it out.